From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in December of 2013 when the Rochester Area Community Foundation released its report on poverty in Rochester. And no, poverty was not a hidden condition, nor the prevalence of poverty a surprise. But that report put numbers on our problem that helped make it clear to anyone who doubted. We've got a poverty problem. We have a children in poverty problem. We have a concentrated poverty problem. And so in November of 2014, plans for a new sweeping anti-poverty initiative took shape. Our elected leaders and the leaders of local agencies and the men and women who work with people in poverty, they knew that this had been tried before. The promises had been made before. They knew that poverty would not be changed overnight, but they knew they had to try something different. And it began with listening to one another. You know the old saying about too many cooks in the kitchen? Well, at some point, the cooks have to communicate with one another. And that's what they began doing. More than 1,000 people have now provided input on poverty in our community. More than 200 people volunteered on committees and work groups. And we now have the early findings and the beginnings of a plan that is designed to help alleviate poverty over the next 15 years and beyond. This hour, we'll talk about the specifics with some of the leaders in charge. Let me welcome my guests in studio. They include Maggie Brooks, Monroe County Executive. Nice to have you here.
Thank you.
Joe Morelli is the Majority Leader of the State Assembly. And Joe, thank you for taking the time.
Always nice to be here, Evan.
Leonard Brock is here, the Director of the Rochester Monroe Anti-Poverty Initiative. Leonard, nice to see you back.
Thanks for having me.
Fran Weisberg is President and CEO of the United Way of Greater Rochester. Fran, nice to see you.
Thank you.
And joining us later this hour will be Rochester Mayor Lovely Warren. So a full group. Before we dive into that, just a brief word from my colleague, Juan Vasquez, who I don't see in there, but I think he's there.
I'm here.
I'm going to hear your voice. I can't see you.
You only have about 20 people in the studio there.
How are you, Juan?
I am doing well, and you take a look at that roster of folks that you've got in the studio right now, and that I can only see one because I'm behind a wall here. But that is an impressive roster of folks that are going to be coming on to talk about such an important topic, and it's just one of the things that we do here for public broadcasting, bring everybody together to talk about the issues that are important to the community. And if you feel that that's important too, that we are asking for you to make a pledge of support to WXXI and public broadcasting here in Rochester and beyond. You make a pledge at 454-6300. You can go online at WXXI.org/give. It's your support that helps make shows like Connections possible and topics to be able to talk about topics like this possible too. Right, Evan?
Thank you very much, Juan. Yep, 454-6300 if you value this kind of programming, and that's right now. And let's get right to it because some of our guests have limited time, and I'm going to start with Assembly Majority Leader Morelli. You know, our listeners have wanted specifics about what's going to be done, how to know if it's working. One of the published goals is reducing poverty by 50% in our community by the year 2030. Some of the other goals are certainly ambitious, but maybe more nebulous. For example, ensuring that every family has the opportunity to achieve the American dream. Are the goals so far specific enough for you? Do you feel like we're getting metrics down now that we're going to be able to measure success?
Yes, we have, as you indicated, identified in the progress report a number of specific goals, such as reducing poverty by 50% in the next 15 years. We also have a data team, which Leonard can speak to in much more detail, that looks at those kinds of metrics that if we're going to be able to meet that target, we're going to have to do some interim things. And we're very mindful of the group. The data team has been working very, very hard. I've had the privilege of sitting in a couple of their conversations. So we are working very hard at it. It's a little difficult sometimes to know what are the things that if you achieve this, will this affect, you know, if you achieve A, will that affect B? And it's hard sometimes to know. But that data team has been working very hard at identifying those key indicators, which will tell us we're on the right path.
One of the things that Ed Doherty, who wrote that report for the Rochester Area Community Foundation in December of 2013, one of the things he said on this program is, everyone loves to ask, tell me one thing I can do. And he said, The first thing we can do is realize there's not just one thing to do. It's really complex. But Joe, what are you seeing come out of these work groups? What are the specifics that start to take shape in your mind? Not just one, but kind of get some first steps here.
Well, I think Ed's point needs to be underscored, and one of the things that we talk about frequently is there is no silver bullet. There's no panacea. There's no one thing that you could change because people impacted by poverty and people who live in crisis have many challenges that face them, and so in order for you to be able to help identify ways to move them from crisis to self-sufficiency, you have to deal with the complete person. And no two individuals face the same challenges. I think any of us in any of our lives, we all have different strengths and different weaknesses, different obstacles, different assets. And so what we need to do is build a comprehensive system which recognizes that everyone is different, that everyone has specific needs, and so there is no one thing. But I would say there's three things that we have identified that are overarching. First is we need to confront structural racism. It's a tough topic. People often want to avoid a conversation about it because it makes us uncomfortable. But not only in this community, but around this country, that we have to identify, recognize, and challenge the notions that have created structural racism. The second is that many children and families have profound trauma in their life. And when I came to this, the way that I thought of trauma was, you know, something that involved a neighborhood violence or domestic violence, something that was sort of acute. And what I've learned is that trauma can be not for a child, not knowing where your next meal is coming from, not knowing where you're going to be living from week to week or month to month. And those kinds of impacts are dramatic in how they affect people. So making sure that we have services that are trauma-informed. And then finally, and the one that I've probably focused much of my attention is the fact that we don't really have a comprehensive system. We have, as the mayor likes to say, a community that's rich in services, but the services don't connect to one another in a meaningful way. So really developing a comprehensive system of supports for people impacted by poverty and in poverty so they can move from that crisis stage to self-sufficiency is one of the real immediate needs that we have.
Fran, you wanted to jump in there?
Yes, and back to what you said, Ed Doherty had said, not only is there no one silver bullet, no one entity can make this happen. What I am most impressed by this entire effort is you're seeing government, churches, community organizations, people living in poverty, so many groups and individuals coming together, data-driven, good analytics, but and a real commitment to actually move the needle going forward. So it's been a really amazing process throughout this entire thing, and everybody is staying at this table, which is why United Way is very honored to be actually just playing the role of the coordinator. But the key is everybody, all the different stakeholders, actually staying at the table, including business, to say all boats must rise. Everybody must thrive in this community, not just a few.
There was something else that Ed Doherty said that stands out to me as we talk about this. Joe Morelli just mentioned structural racism, confronting that, being honest about that, being honest about our history and the way it impacts people. And on this program, within the last year, Ed Doherty talked about an issue that was touched upon in some of the early findings from the Anti-Poverty Initiative, which is affordable housing. So just this morning, I read a story from WBEZ in Chicago, and the story focused on their effort to bring more affordable housing to the affluent suburbs, not just through government means, by the way, through churches, through private means. And one proposed project would have brought 48 units of affordable housing, no more than $900 a month, designed for families of four, making roughly $45,000 a year or less. And it's in a wealthy suburb. The median income, $103,000, large houses. I want to play some sound from one of the public meetings in which the suburban residents said they would not stand for that kind of a housing development in their town. Again, this is from reporter Natalie Moore at WBEZ outside Chicago.
Oh, but you can tell people where to live.
Hold on one second.
We tell the poor.
Come back here. That's the wrong one here. Let's go to the second one down, Val, if we could. This is, again, this is from that debate at a set of a public hearing outside Chicago, and let's listen to what some of the residents had to say.
Please do not portray me as being anti-diversity.
How would such a massive new development right next to us, whether low income or not, affect the property values in our neighborhood?
I'm concerned for my grandchildren who go to school in Deerfield.
The issue is not affordable housing. The issue is this development on this tiny piece of property next to high-value homes.
The point is this development is the wrong development for this area.
All right, so that's WBEZ Chicago. When I talked to Ed Doherty, he said there are parallels to big cities like Chicago and Rochester. Here's what Ed Doherty said related to the way clustered poverty has happened in our own community and whether you can tell the suburbs to sort of get with the program and help out more.
Oh, but you can tell people where to live. We tell the poor people where to live. See, that's the problem with that argument. It's not a naturally existing reality. We have made sure that rental housing for the poor is concentrated. So we don't have a naturally occurring market reality. We have a reality that has resulted from decades and decades of restricting the places where we will permit the poor to live.
All right, so whether it's affluent suburbs near Chicago, affluent suburbs in Monroe County, the question's the same. Is it time to make the suburbs part of the solution, spread out affordable housing, try to decluster poverty, and will suburban residents agree to support that kind of thing around them? I'll start with the county executive. What do you make of that?
Well, let me just answer it in a very broad way. We are doing already in this community a lot of innovative things around affordable housing. The state will tell you, the state leaders who are in housing and those that work in the housing area, that they do more in Monroe County in this region than anywhere else in the state in terms of placement of housing, innovative models of housing. And so I think what you're touching on is where the next phase of this poverty initiative is going to go. This is our report is a beginning and not an end, and a lot of people have said, well, you know, where's the silver bullet? What are the specifics? What are the things you are going to look at? And I think what we're all saying here is the report is a beginning and not an end. And these are areas that we're going to have to look at. Housing, certainly one of them. Transportation. You could probably have the same conversation around transportation. And child care is another guiding principle that we are focusing on. But I think what people have to remember is that right now we are spending a lot of resources and a lot of time in areas like housing, and we're not moving the needle on poverty. So how do we look at it in a different way? We look at it in a more collaborative and comprehensive way than we have. The suburban issue, I will tell you, if you look at the poverty statistics, yes, the concentration is greatest in the city, but the new face of poverty is in suburban areas. You go out to East Rochester, you go out to Gates, you go out to some of the inner ring suburbs. Poverty is your neighbor. Poverty is the child that rides the school bus with your son or daughter. Poverty is the woman that sits next to you at church. You know, we have to, as part of this initiative, I think, broaden our view and our definition of what poverty is. It's a stereotype right now. And the reality is it's much more than that. And one of the things this initiative will have to do is really expand our horizons and make sure that we are educating, making aware, building advocacy in places where we haven't before. But for people to say poverty isn't a problem in the suburbs, they're just not paying attention because it truly is.
Do you disagree with Mr. Daugherty's premise that we have kind of clustered it by choice in government agencies?
I think a lot of the systems and practices over the years have done a lot of things to reinforce the situation that we're in. This didn't happen overnight. This has been years of policy and service structure and, alignment of resources in different ways that have brought us to the point where we spend a lot, we put a lot of energy and time into poverty, we are not moving the needle. So we have to do something differently. And that's what this initiative is all about. Yes, I think one of the great things that we're doing, and today at City Hall, we kicked off we welcomed IBM to town to kick off the Smarter Cities Initiative, a grant that's going to help us align resources and align systems. And that's a critical part of this, looking at what we do, how we react to poverty now, and how we need to change that mindset going forward. That will be very helpful in areas like housing, transportation, education, some of the things that are really reinforcing poverty versus giving people a way out of poverty.
All right. Leonard Brock is the director of the Anti-Poverty Initiative. How do you see the question on concentration of poverty and what we're starting to see emerge from this report?
Yeah, certainly. There's a stark concentration of poverty within the city of Rochester, but to County Executive's point, there is an increase of poverty within the suburban neighborhoods and areas. When you look at the severity of the concentration of poverty in Rochester, one of the things that is very important to note is that if we were to reduce poverty by 30%, we still would be at the relative numbers of similar comparable cities across the country.
National average. Yeah.
National average. So there's a unique problem in Rochester in which the extreme concentration of poverty, as well as those persons that are extremely impoverished, is what somewhat changes the narrative for the local community in such a way that we have to do much more to address this wicked problem.
Can I make an observation?
Sure.
On that? What I think we strive for is to give people the opportunity to move wherever in this community they choose to move, and people ought to have that opportunity. But it's interesting, when we went through our focus groups and community groups, et cetera, what we found people impacted by poverty said is there's this big move to move us out of the neighborhoods where we grew up in. And what we'd prefer is people help address the concerns and the problems in our neighborhoods so we don't have to move. This ought to be about opportunity and choice for people, and we ought to create those opportunities and those choices. But as we said at the beginning, there's no silver bullet. Simply moving someone who has challenges in their lives to a different location without any support services or any ways of mentoring those individuals or giving them additional resources or the tools to be able to be self-sufficient is simply, you know, not going to answer the question. And it sort of, you know, gets back to the original premise, which is there's a lot of things we need to do. Not simply moving people doesn't solve it. We have to develop much deeper a connection between services and people to enable them to be successful.
County Executive Brooks?
You know what, and Joe makes a great point. You can look at housing as a barrier. You can look at transportation as a barrier. But really, the biggest barrier of all is opportunity. There is great momentum in our city, especially right now. And our suburban residents have the ability to take advantage of that opportunity. We need to make sure those opportunities, everyone has access. And I think that is the concentration of poverty is a barrier to that access. And the mayor speaks to this much more eloquently than I can, that everybody, that really is a key to me, to a pathway out of poverty, is how do you provide access, whether you live in a neighborhood now in a concentration of poverty, whether you live in a suburban area where poverty is a part of the dynamic, are we providing access to momentum that we see in our community to everyone? Because that is what will make a difference, the quality of life.
See, I didn't grow up in this community. I've been here for a number of years now. So correct me if I'm wrong on the history, but Joe, what my response when I hear you say, hey, we talk to people, and it's not like they just want to move. They don't want to just get out of their neighborhood. They want their neighborhood to be more successful where they live. And that makes absolute sense to me. Yes. I think we should all want that. But didn't really, when we talk about, sometimes the conversation sort of ignores history. Like, well, people use terms like ghetto or bad neighborhoods or bad part of town. And in many ways, didn't we do that ourselves in the 40s and 50s and 60s? And aren't we sort of responsible for the way that was clustered to begin with? So I understand somebody growing up, I don't want to leave the neighborhood I grew up in. But haven't we over the decades decided that affluent people generally are not going to live there? And generally, it's been racially broken down. And that's why I'm thinking, do we need to try to change some of that? Fran?
Well, I think, rather than going back 40 or 50 years, what I'm so excited about is that we really started from here's where we are. We can't change it. What happened yesterday and the day before. Again, I want to go back to this has been one of the most massive things that we have done in this community. As the majority leader said, brought so many people together. We heard from so many people. These work groups weren't just a bunch of, no offense, academics or theoreticians sitting somewhere in some ivory tower. This was a very vibrant, rich process. And the other thing is, and we heard from so many people and are listening, I'm also very impressed by this in two other big ways. One, we're setting three priorities so that we can actually take some really bite-sized chunks and move forward. As the majority leader said, it's about a system, it's about adult mentors, and it's about early childhood. And we have the state of New York as our sincere, authentic partner right now. So instead of keep looking back, I want to really have everybody understand what's been happening the last year and where are we going now.
In a minute, Fran's got to get out the door, and we're going to bring in Rochester Mayor Lovely Warren for our second half hour. But I have got the county executive from Monroe County and Joe Morelli representing state government here. And one of the things the county executive brought up, you brought up child care, which is, I know many people are saying is a priority. Just today, there were people rallying saying we need more support, we need more services, we need to restore cuts. And I don't want to frame this incorrectly. So county executive, do I have it right that any cuts we've talked about, you have said, hey, the state can step up too. That there's a lot of mandates on local governments, on county governments, that in many ways you feel like your budget is often constrained, and that if we want to provide more services, can the state do more? Has that been your position?
Your
position?
Well, you know, I will take ownership of part of that, but here's the thing. I mean, remove all the clutter and the noise. The reality is we have digressed into the daycare conversation around who's to blame. And every year it's, is it the state responsibility? Is it the county's responsibility? The reality is we spend a lot of money on childcare, but we are not, again, moving the needle on making a difference for low-income families that need it. I think the connection to poverty is the first time we have been able to have that collaborative approach to looking at child care from a higher level. Let's not talk about who should pay more, because at the end of the day, we spend a lot of money and we need to do something to improve the outcomes for families. This is a huge opportunity for us with the state at the table to make child care a focal point in a proactive versus reactive way, to kind of take some of that he said, she said every year around budget time out of it, and recognize that it's a problem that we all need to own, and we all need to figure out how to make it better and more effective. And maybe it's realigning some of the resources we currently get. A lot of the regulations don't allow us to do that. So a portion of the Anti-Poverty Initiative effort is to look at what are the things that don't cost us any money? What are some of the policies that we can change so that we can more effectively spend the money? I think when we get into those conversations, you're going to find a vast improvement in child care services.
Do you think that Monroe County is spending everything it possibly could right now, within its means, regarding child care, or could Monroe County spend
more? We spend more than any other county in the state, and if you put it in the context of a $1 billion budget, yes, we have leveraged what we can for child care. That doesn't mean that with some adjustment to policy and collaboration with the state, we couldn't take some of those resources and funnel them more effectively to help our families and our children.
All right, Joe Morelli, can the state then step up and help provide more in this area?
Well, I think we all need to. I think I agree very much with what the county executive has said, is that this is one of the first times, at least in my memory, where we have the county government, the city government, and the state government sitting together talking about how do we remove barriers, what are the unintended consequences of policies, well-meaning though they may be, which have just made this more difficult. So it's not only an allocation of greater resources, which I think we will clearly need to do, but it's also making it more effective and efficient, the use of money that we're already putting on the table. And look, this is a problem that's going to continue to persist until we address it, because too many people who look to be self-sufficient find the burden of childcare and the costs associated with such that it makes less sense to go out and get into the working world, because the offsetting costs put you further behind than when you started. So we're really talking about redesigning that so that the benefit cliff doesn't hurt people. And I think there are other innovative ways that we can do it. We're rebuilding schools in the city of Rochester. We should really think about, and this isn't really something I've explored yet, but whether or not we could build space for private daycare operators to come in and operate space so that they may not have the burden of the debt service for the capital construction. It doesn't have to be run by the city school district, but private providers might be able to come in since we're building and reconstructing schools and doing it, and maybe keep families closer together. So I think there are ways to do it. It's going to take greater resources. But the important thing, and I don't want this to be lost, is the conversation that's going on between the city, the county, and the state is unprecedented, certainly in my years in government, and that what gives me hope for the future.
All right, and let me get Fran Weisberg before we let her go and we bring in the mayor. Fran, just some thoughts from you before you head out the door here. We have listeners who, again, they want specifics. I know they're hungry for it. I know it's early in the process. But what's the timeline in your mind for us to start seeing more things actually happening, more dominoes falling?
Well, again, I don't think we can underestimate that everybody is working together on each level of government. But I also think the community, the people that provide services, United Way, the Upstate Revitalization, the Finger Lakes Economic Development folks are all working. I think the next step in this is we're creating solution teams that look at really what is evidence-based, what is best practice, what are the measures we can do, because we also don't want to rush into things. You know, this took many, many, many years to create this problem. As the county executive said, we need to be thoughtful and deliberative. But again, we have three priorities. We're going to be going to Albany on those three priorities. IBM was there, the system, adult mentoring, and early childhood. So you can bet we will all be going to Albany to really go and support those three going forward this year.
Evan, can I, at one point I don't want to get lost here either, which we haven't mentioned, but if you think about what's going on right now in our community, we have an opportunity to compete for upstate revitalization mm-hmm. money, which is a huge economic development driver in this community. We have something called DSRIP, which is the use of federal Medicaid waiver dollars to expand services for people in Medicaid who currently wouldn't qualify for those services. And we have been talking about how all these things, along with the Anti-Poverty Initiative, create an opportunity and alignment that has never existed before. And so job opportunities, better health care, a focus on children and families in poverty, all of that together, if we can align it properly, this is a once, forget about once in a lifetime, this is the once in a century opportunity to do something unique in Rochester, and that's why I think we're all so excited as well.
We're talking about the Anti-Poverty Initiative. We'll get to your phone calls in the second half hour. Let's get a short break and come back with our guest. Monroe County Executive Maggie Brooks is here. The mayor of Rochester, Lovely Warren, is here. Leonard Brock is the director of the Anti-Poverty Initiative. And Fran Weisberg and Joe Morelli are short on time, but we appreciate them being here as well. So short break and more of your comments and questions, and we'll talk to the mayor next. Coming up in our second hour, we're looking at the most deadly mental illness in this country. It's eating disorders. Why are so many eating disorders not treated, not diagnosed? How can that change? Take a look at the ongoing research and the new research that's being done, and talk about personal experiences as well. It's all coming up next hour on Connections.
Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from Lento, a farm-to-table restaurant serving dinner with menus featuring seasonal ingredients from local farms. Located in the Village Gate Square and online at lentorestaurant.com.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. A brief cameo once again by my colleague Juan Vasquez. Hi, Juan.
Hi there, Evan. And this is quite the conversation that you're having, and the roster of folks that you have in here, too, is great, too. And it's just part of what we do with public broadcasting, bringing on the newsmakers, the folks that make the decisions, like we're talking about here with this Anti-Poverty Initiative, bringing the folks together to inform the community about what is going on. That's what we do here on Connections and on public broadcasting, and you can support that. It's listener-supported. Because of you, we're able to bring this to you, and you can make a pledge of support at 454-6400, or that's 454-6300, sorry, or online at wxxi.org/give.
All right, let me bring in Rochester Mayor Lovely Warren, who is with us now and joining the panel. Nice to see you, Mayor. How are you?
Nice to see you as well. I'm good.
Well, you know, these are often people think of them as intractable problems, but let me ask you first your thoughts on what we've seen so far, the work that you and your colleagues here have been doing on this initiative, and some specific ideas that excite you going forward on trying to work on poverty.
Well, I think that we have come together as a community in an unprecedented way. And I think that that is a testament to where we are as leaders working together to make a difference and to make change in the communities that we love. To have the county executive, the majority leader, the governor, you know, have people in this community rally behind the most challenged among us is something that I know many people have been waiting to see for a long time. And I'm just happy to be a part of it. The fact that, you know, when you look at the report and the things that came out of it was that this is a stepping stone. It's the start. We have a long ways to go. We did not get into this situation when it comes down to the concentration of poverty or the issue of poverty in our community overnight. This has been going on for decades, and we as a community are finally taking this on head first and, you know, head on, and we're going to do everything possible to reduce poverty.
Number of people online listening, weighing in on some of the comments that they're hearing. And just heard from several listeners saying, yes, in the suburbs, we're seeing poverty as well. We're, you know, food pantries doing work, all, things like that. If you're just joining us, County Executive Maggie Brooks said earlier this hour that, you know, we can't just think of poverty as a city problem, that in many ways, especially the inner ring suburbs, she mentioned East Rochester, Gates, as just two examples, but certainly not alone, where poverty is an issue. So the question on concentration of poverty came up. And Mayor Warren, do you view the suburbs as you know, a place where poverty, especially maybe the outer ring suburbs or different places, do we need to ask people to do more? Or do you agree now that, hey, we've got concentrated poverty in the city, but there's poverty in the suburbs as well, and it's not a question of moving people and asking suburbs to do anything different right now. How do you view that?
Well, I think that we have a very giving community. When you think about the fact that the United Way, Fran Weisberg, was just here, the United Way of Rochester raises more money than basically Buffalo, Albany, and Syracuse combined. So we have a very giving community. We have a number of community organizations that our community supports, and we thank them and appreciate them for that. And so we have a community that's basically program rich and results poor. One of the things that the poverty report has outlined is that people don't necessarily want to move outside of their neighborhood. They want to remain there. They just want their neighborhood uplifted. And for many years, we have had this discussion about shifting people from one neighborhood to another. That doesn't get to the root cause. And what we're trying to do is get to the root cause of why people are stuck in what we call this on this basic treadmill of basic needs and stuck in poverty generation after generation. Until you start to deal with those root causes, then you cannot really change the fact that people are in poverty, and it will happen from generation to generation. I believe that poverty is growing. When you look at the number of people in our suburbs, as the county executive has outlined, that are now being affected by this particular issue. Even if you look at what's happening around domestic violence, for the first time in our community, domestic violence is higher in the suburbs than it is in the city by a few percentage points. That just is telling us something that we need to pay attention to, and that is that our community is suffering. They are asking for help, and we have to start to focus on our weakest link and put in steps to places and the support systems that is going to help people move them along the stairway out of poverty.
All right. If you're waiting on the phones to jump in, I will get to you in a moment. I can't see my board right now, so I'll let our producer Megan and Val know. I can't see who's on the phone, but we've got plenty of calls to get to. Here's Steven on Twitter, who says he's still not hearing a plan to desegregate the city, and he says we are still a segregated community. Are we a segregated community, Mayor Warren?
Well, I think that we have issues when it comes down to the concentration of poverty. And if you look at poverty being a black and white or black and brown and white issue, then the way that we had concentrated or built affordable housing was in a certain segment of the city, in what we call the Crescent. That is not the issue that we're talking about here today when you're talking about poverty as it pertains to this entire community. You have both white people, Hispanic people, brown people, Asian people, all of them that are facing this issue of poverty and how they are going to feed their families. And that's what we are trying to tackle here at this point in time. How are we going to change this dynamic that has overcome in our community and give people, no matter the color of their skin or where they live, the resources and the help that they need to actually move themselves out of poverty?
All right, so forgive me, I didn't hear an exact answer, but maybe you reject the premise of whether we have a segregated community. Yes, no?
It depends on what you mean by segregation. Is it, what are you segregating it on? Most of the city of Rochester is majority minority, so you have 51%, African, about 42% African American, 11% Hispanic, and then the rest white. So you have this majority minority community that lives in the city of Rochester. When you look at the suburbs, you have a majority Caucasian community, and so you can. If you look at it based on race, yes. But if you look at this issue of poverty, then it has no color. It has no economic bounds. It has no, they're not just concentrated in one particular area, because you see it all over our community, in rural parts of our city, mm-hmm. in rural mm-hmm. parts of our county, in our most affluent towns, you are seeing this. And so, and on that basis, no, it does not. It's not segregated.
Okay.
And you know what? It does not matter. It goes back to the access. If you give people equal access to opportunity, equal ability to take advantage of the momentum that we see around jobs and economic growth in this community, it doesn't matter where you live, the color of your skin. And the mayor has a great point. The poverty in rural parts of this county, and in many regards, Monroe County is a rural county, is something that nobody talks about, but clearly a challenge. But it's about access. to opportunity. People should have the ability to connect with new jobs, to connect with, you know, all the other things that a lot of us benefit from, and it's the foundation for our quality of life.
And the reason I pressed the question, I think people online are, they heard Joe Morelli say one of the first things Joe Morelli highlighted earlier this hour was that we have to admit that we have a structural racism problem. So, Mayor, do you agree with Joe Morelli on that?
Oh, absolutely. We do have structural racism. And when we talk about structural racism, that's what the county executives talk about, equal access to opportunity.
Right.
So that so, when you have young people that that are suffering because of an educational system or a failed educational system that they are stuck in, that many middle class families are not subjected to, because the number one reason why middle class families leave the city of Rochester is because of what's happening around education. And so they put their home up for sale, they move to Pittsburgh, they move to Brighton, where their children are given better opportunities. Whereas people that cannot vote with their feet, they cannot give their children a better opportunity to educationally, they are stuck in a failing system. And therefore, when we talk about this access to opportunity, we have to make sure that we're giving every child and every family a fighting chance at life. And when you look at the numbers, when it comes down to poverty, you have a number of working class or working poor people that have college degrees. Many of those people are people of color. And so they don't have the access that they need to those quality jobs, those jobs that are paying a living wage for them to take care of their families. And so that's when he's talking about structural racism. That's what he's talking about. Right. Well, that's what I believe he's talking about anyway.
Leonard Brock?
Yeah, absolutely. And I was going to make the same point. Poverty certainly does not have a skin color, but in Rochester, I find us to be opportunity inept. So there's a significant number of persons of color that may not have the same access to opportunities. And that's one of the things that we highlighted within the report. So when the structural racism or this principle of structural inequality came up, primarily because there were many people across the various different domains of the work groups that said this is a major barrier that prevents us from being able to experience economic self-sufficiency. So there's two things in particular that the Poverty Report does a really good job at doing, being able to frame the conversation in such a way where we're not running away from the elephant that many people say is in the room. So we're bold in that we're trying to really exemplify what it means as a community to be able to come together and address some of our most challenging issues and barriers as it relates to structural racism. The second thing is we're really looking to pay attention specifically to how do we support families in poverty. When you look at the demographic profile of the working poor, for example, to Mayor Lovie Warren's point, there's a significant number of families that have post-secondary education. But when you also demystify some of these stereotypes, you look at half of the working poor, half of the working poor don't have children. So you look at some of the myths that, you know, poor people or people of color do not work, they're lazy, they're having kids out of wedlock. That's not true when you look at the demographic profile. So it's a unique opportunity for us to inform and educate the broader community, but more importantly, do something to really address these barriers.
All right, let me get to the phones. People have been waiting. It's John in Fairport. First up, go ahead, John.
Hi, Evan. Thanks very much for doing this show, and thanks to the panel for
sure.
All the work you're doing. My question is this. Most of the money that goes to anti-poverty programs comes from either Albany or the federal government, and they're very structured. I just wonder if how much flexibility the local communities have to drive programs so that they're more effective. I mean, as you pointed out, we've been doing this for the war on poverty started 50 years ago. We haven't moved the needle.
That's a great question, and I think that is one of the unprecedented opportunities that we have as a community to pilot this initiative. The state is at the table here, and they chose to be here, and they are truly partners in helping us with this, and nothing is off the table. It may mean being able to pilot some waiver opportunities to have more flexibility with programming. I think that's really one of the benefits of having IBM here to kind of help us analyze our systems and our services and align those. And then what do we need from the state to allow us to actually implement change? And so having them as a full partner in this is different than what we've done in the past and gives us the opportunity to correct what you've talked about, programs that are just not flexible or movable in any way. And so this is really a bottom up. The state has met with us on several occasions and made it very clear that they are not going to come in here and tell us how to eliminate or impact poverty in Rochester and Monroe County. They want to hear from the community. So it's bottom up, and I think that will lead to a very a good benefit for the community.
Thank you, John.
Thanks very much. Can I just have a quick follow-up?
Sure.
Arthur Brooks has written a book called The Conservative Heart. Arthur Brooks is the CEO of the American Enterprise Institute, which, of course, is a conservative think tank. That goes to the heart of local initiatives. And I just wonder if it's possible for some sort of across-the-aisle approach in Washington in the years to come that might help break this logjam.
John, thanks for the phone call. I'm not familiar with the book, County Executive Brooks.
I am not either, but obviously when you look at government at every level, this is probably one of the largest spaces that we all play in. Monroe County's budget is predominantly spent through our social service department. When you look at the massive amounts of money that comes out of Washington, I think there's probably more of a bipartisan approach taking place now. It's just that we are so stuck in these systems, and the structure is kind of very binding. And somebody said it earlier, instead of looking back and trying to fix what's broken, we're going to really have to go forward and look at a completely different perspective when it comes to poverty.
Okay, let me get back to the phones. And this is a different John in Rochester. Go ahead, John.
Hey, Evan. You know, we've got the wealth. I grew up in a low-income family. We have the wealthiest poor in the world here in New York State. And since, I think, Lyndon Johnson, the federal government has spent $22 trillion on social programs. Joe mentioned the structural racism. In our society, I think that does exist, but I think we also have a structural corruption problem in our government, New York State, our federal government. What we need is to get more resources out of the hands of some of the corrupt dealings that go on in Albany and Washington, and get the resources back in the hands where they were at one point. In the private sector. The private sector is more efficient in putting together employment and economic vitality than the government is. I saw a study from Congressional Budget Office did a study that said that the private sector is 500% more efficient than the federal government in getting out resources and making them viable. This is what produces jobs. This is what reduces poverty. I really think Joe and some of the other politicians have to look at New York State as an example. Make New York State a right-to-work state. Get rid of the corruption, which I think a lot of it's due to the public unions in New York State and in Washington, D.C.
All right, John,
that's our problem.
John, let me just ask you a quick question here. You point out the number and the amount of resources we've been already spending on poverty, and nobody would argue that the results have been great over the years when it comes to poverty. Obviously, we've got a poverty problem in this community, and it's not like we've never spent a dime on it. So I understand that point. You did characterize America's poor as the richest poor in the world, and I want to make clear, are you indicating that people in poverty have it a lot better than we're making it out?
Yeah, I do. If you look at statistics, I think you're going to find that a lot of statistics don't take in consideration some of the subsidized housing, free medical, other type free education, great resources have been put into our public schools. When you look at that total package, that is not reflected in statistics. The fact is, effectively, the incomes of the poor are much higher than they are. They show up in statistics.
All right, so let me ask Leonard Brock then. What do you think there? He's saying that the poor have it way better than we are making it out to be when you add up all of those things. Leonard?
I think there's certainly a need for us to look at the resources, and one of the things that we're looking to do with the initiative is how do we leverage the existing resources and supports in a much more coordinated and aligned way. So we've actually collaborated in a way that's much more methodical than what we have in the past. So as opposed to just collaborating for the sake of collaborating, we've adopted the collective impact model. So we have a shared community agenda, which is five components of this collective impact framework. One, we have a shared community agenda, which we're looking at ways to reduce poverty. There's mutually reinforcing activities. So as opposed to having these siloed supports, how do we work together to reinforce the same community outcome? Then there's continuous communications to ensure that we're educated and making everyone aware. And then there's also being able to look at success with a similar lens. So what specifically does success look like? And then we also have the support of a backbone organization as looking to drive the day-to-day activity. So there is an opportunity for us to look at the current resources and supports, because when you look at the educational system, there's a significant amount of money that goes into to supporting some of the schools. But it's not necessarily a problem for which money can solve alone. That's not to say that we have enough resources, but we can't look at it from the perspective as money is going to solve all the problems. We have to look at it from a multimodal perspective for which how we coordinate and align existing resources, how do we leverage whatever resources that we may not necessarily have, and more importantly, how do we work together to reinforce the same values, and how do we ensure that we are all wrong in the same direction?
All right, brief answer. Mayor Warren, John thinks the poor have it better than we're letting on here. Do they?
Well, I think that Dr. Brock is right when he talks about what we are doing to go forward. I think that our community has an issue when it comes down to being program rich and results poor. And that's what we're trying to solve here. If you have a problem in our community, we have a program that's meant to fix it. But for some reason, there's a disconnect. And we see that disconnect when talking to people that are affected by poverty. And we're going to have to make sure that those different organizations and those different processes are talking to one another. And that's why having IBM here to look at our system and how we can break down these silos of communication is something that we value. I think that I disagree on the fact that that we have a problem with unions. Many of the poor people in our community, or what we call the working poor, just making trying to make ends meet. The way that the system is currently set up for them, and the county executive and I talked about this along with our state folks, that as soon as they start working, the system is set up so that it basically snatches the rug from up under them. If they are receiving rental assistance, if they're receiving childcare assistance, then if they make a certain income, then automatically those resources are snatched from them. And that's not a decision by the county exec per se. It's the way that the system is built. And we need to develop something more of a sliding scale. You want people to earn more money. You want them to be able to become self-sufficient and to take care of their families on their own. But in order for them to do that, the way that we have set things up is that as soon as they start to do that, you snatch everything from them, and they're better off being dependent than being independent. And so we have to look at that and look at those barriers, those structural barriers that we have in place that creates that dependency on a basic need system. And that's what we're trying to do right now.
30 seconds?
Absolutely. I've kind of framed it as the industry of poverty. We spend a lot of money. We created all these complicated systems. When people walk through our door in the county, we don't say, what do you need? We give them a menu and we say, this is what we're going to give you. We have to start looking at people through the lens of individuality. What is this individual? What does this family need? And versus just when they walk through the door, you're part of the industry, and we give you a way in, but we don't give you a way out.
All right, 30 seconds, Bonnie. Keep it brief. Go ahead.
Okay, it's very hard in 30 seconds. Just a couple things. One is regard to affordable housing. I think there is a need to have people have choices, so that needs to be placed in different places. One of the big problems with the reference to communities and neighborhoods being involved in the city is that there's been a long-term problem with a lot of missed hits on community involvement by people who live in the neighborhoods. What has happened is the seems like, and I've been active in this myself, the not-for-profit agencies become the spokesperson person for the neighborhood. So recently something developed on in the Avenue D area. There wasn't one community person here who was involved in feedback on that. It was not-for-profits who may mean well sometimes, but they don't live here. They don't have the right to make those decisions. Funding comes from the city. They do a request for proposal. Then the not-for-profits all swoom in and say, you know, here's what we're going to do. So that's a huge problem right there. That could be changed. The other problem is that we do, in terms of resources, we have, I think it's been documented many times now, we have, the rich have been getting so rich it's disgusting and vile. That has got to change. And if we don't change that, and we don't have the politics to change it, then we need to have a kind of a revolution to get people in office who will start changing that. Because that is, it's not the whole answer, but that's a huge huge problem.
All right, Bonnie,
Section 8 has been on hold for about 10 years.
I appreciate it, Bonnie. I've got to let Leonard Brock, I've only got about 20 seconds, unfortunately, a lot to chew on there. Just briefly, she's saying, hey, outside agencies don't live in these neighborhoods. Hear our voices. What do you say?
I couldn't agree more, and I 100% agree with what she states. And we also have done a really good job in the community to ensure we have community voice. So persons directly impacted by poverty participate in the work groups. And we actually took the responsibility of going into the neighborhoods and getting the input from those persons that are most affected, which informed the work of the work groups and also continue to drive the work moving forward. So we've included the voice of the persons in the community every step of the way, and we will continue to do so moving forward.
You online with this report and with the benchmarks so far, Leonard, where can we find it?
Yes, the website is endingpovertynow.org. So information about the Rochester Monroe Anti-Poverty Initiative can be found at endingpovertynow.org.
Let's continue the conversation in the future. Thank you, Leonard.
Mayor Warren,
thank you for your time.
Thank you.
County Executive Brooks, thank you for your time. All right, short break and more connections next.